This is the OANDA podcast, brought to you by Jazz FM's Business Breakfast.
Welcome back to the OANDA Market Insights podcast, brought to you with the Jazz FM Business Breakfast. I'm Johnny Hart. Each week, we review the stories that made the business and market headlines, as well as look forward to the week to come. And it's been another dramatic week.
We have to believe that at some point, common sense will prevail. But we see no sign of that in this action today.
This is a bad day for the world trade. It's totally unacceptable that a country is imposing unilateral measures.
For Italy, it's clear structural reforms has to continue. A country with 132% debt-to-GDP ratio does not have a margin to have very large expansions of budgets.
And it's welcome back to OANDA senior market analyst Craig Earlham. And we'll later hear from Alfonso Esparza in Toronto with his view of the week. Craig, no doubt tariffs and the latest non-farm payrolls will be at the top of Alfonso's agenda. But what was your moment of the week?
Well, this week's actually been quite Eurocentric, so it's been quite nice to be able to talk about something new for a change, although I'm sure the Italians and Spaniards may disagree. I don't think they're particularly fond of political turmoil in their own countries. But yeah, it has been a really interesting week, and I think my market moment of the week does reflect that. It's the Italian situation. Again, this wasn't an off-the-cuff item on the agenda this week. It's something that has been rolling for a little while. The elections actually took place months ago. It culminated in discussions between Five Star Movement and Lega, two Eurosceptic parties. One dominates more politics in the north of Italy, another in the south of Italy. Both have some similarities in what they're pushing for, so a loosening of the fiscal purse strings. And again, they very much share the dislike, shall we say, of the euro and how it's manufactured and how it functions. But they do obviously have their differences as well. So there was a lot to go over for the two parties, and at times it looked like there was going to be doubts. We have to remember that during the election, actually, this was seen as the worst outcome scenario of the election, these two parties joining forces, and yet it's happened. Now, the market moment of the week relates to the fact that it was, funnily enough, when the talks appeared to collapse that the markets actually went south. So it was when the president rejected their choice of finance minister because of his past views on the euro and what he perceived to be, therefore, it being a threat to Italy's position in the euro, that triggered the collapse of these talks and threatened new elections. And that is what triggered the FTSE MIB to drop by more than 6.5% over a couple of days. It's what triggered yields on two-year Italian debt and other debt, but two-year Italian debt was the one that was really being highlighted to rise substantially. We have to remember, 2 weeks ago, two-year Italian debt was yielding a negative return. Now, earlier on this week, it was yielding more than 2.7%. That's a huge, huge increase. And this was because of the prospect of new elections. Now, we should stress, the reason why new elections is necessarily not seen as a good thing is because of the way that this turned out. Liga's poll ratings have improved dramatically recently, and I think it's the Eurosceptic stance which has certainly helped this. So the idea now that if we went back to the polls, then Lega and Five Star combined could actually form majority on their own, and the basis of this being that people were worried that this was effectively being seen as a vote on the euro and what the future could hold if they did perform very well in these polls. And they had the rejection of their finance minister almost as the wind in their sails. This was something that was going to get them over the line, that was going to fuel this anti-euro anger, because they were portraying this as interference from Brussels. They were portraying this as Italy being a puppet for Germany and France and others. Now, this is quite staggering, and it's such a dramatic development. And when we consider that only a few months ago this was perceived to be the worst outcome, these two parties potentially going into a minority government coalition or backed by other smaller parties in a coalition, now this was all of a sudden seen as the best case scenario. So we went from these talks actually happening to these talks collapsing to the potential for an autocratic, a technocratic government, which was then rejected by the parties. It was never going to get through Parliament, to then the talks reopening and an agreement being found between the two parties to form the next Italian government. And I think that's put people at ease for now. But we can't forget the longer term threat of this is very real, because now they are in a position of significant power, and they now are going to take on the EU on every front, particularly on the fiscal side. And you have to assume that their aim is going to be to drum up support to leave the euro one day.
We've seen populism spread across the world, and now there seems to be almost contagion. Remember that word, contagion? We used to use that a lot, particularly when it came to Greece. And as if one major political crisis in Europe wasn't enough, things have taken a turn in Spain as well. Spanish PM Mariano Rajoy has been forced out of office through a no-confidence vote in Parliament. So we've got a little bit of eastern, or towards the east of Western Europe, trouble. And now further down south, we've got something not similar, but certainly another thing to unstable markets and worry those who look for stability.
Exactly. I think that's the key takeaway from this. It's the stability factor. Stability is something we've almost taken for granted to an extent in Europe for the past year or two. The fact that Greece hasn't been at threat of a collapse every other week. The fact that we passed these elections last year. We have to remember, the EU, in typical EU fashion, was very much patting itself on the back last year for defeating the populists in France, for defeating the populists in Holland, for defeating the populists in Germany, and saying that this is a voter confidence for the euro. But it wasn't. It was we will continue to tolerate the euro, but in each of these countries, we saw a rise of these populist parties, and they performed better than they ever have done before. And they had the warning signs, but they were too almost arrogant, I remember saying at the time, to see that the threat is very much still there and they can't just ignore it. And in Italy, they've now been given that real serious defeat in that now populists are in charge and they will not have people. They will have people who are going to battle them on every front. Now, the Spain situation is unfortunate. This stems from effectively a crisis for Mariano Rajoy's party. And the vote of no confidence for Rajoy technically provides some form of instability in the near term. But like I say, today that he has now been replaced by the socialist leader, and hopefully we can start to see some form of stability resume. But you'd think that we're going to see elections again in Spain in the next 12 months. It's going to be interesting to see what their approach, the socialist approach, is going to be to the Catalan situation, and what this does for some of the more Eurosceptic parties again in Spain as well, with elections now to come in over the short period. So I'd say the Spain situation is just not ideal. The Italian situation is a major threat.
And what sort of effect has all of this had on the euro this week?
It's been quite difficult for the euro. It has recovered in the past 48 hours because of the stability that a government in Italy brings. It's worth noting that we have had, I think it's more than 60 governments in Italy since the Second World War. So political instability is nothing new in Italy. But the fact that we have found some stability in the near term has helped to lift the euro a little bit, but we're still way off the highs where we were a month or so ago. I think, again, longer term, there is this major threat there. It's going to be very interesting to see how the next week pans out, because I just don't think this is over yet.
Well, to top it all, we have this prospect of a trade war with the steel tariffs as announced by Donald Trump. And we'll, of course, speak in more depth with Alfonso Esparza in a minute when he gives us his view from North America. But I'd be interested to get your view about Jean-Claude Juncker and his comments as far as the steel tariffs are concerned and what they are saying in the EU at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think the EU's stance on this does seem to be, I think they're initially disappointed that the hope for dialogue has failed. I think that's quite clear. They were hoping to resolve this before tariffs were being imposed. Donald Trump decided this isn't the way he does business. We can discuss things after the tariffs have been imposed, because obviously he has they have midterm elections in the US, and he, from his perspective, needs to be seen to be doing something, because so far tax reforms is all he's really delivered, and everything else, the NAFTA talks, etc., aren't going the way he initially thought. It looks as though Europe's going to come back at the US with tariffs of their own to offset the tariffs that the US has imposed. They're going more targeted on certain companies which are politically sensitive for Republicans for these midterm elections, it seems, and also big brand names, so the likes of Levi's and Harley Davidson.
Yeah.
again, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because again, there is some division in Europe, and it's very notable the lack of a UK voice in condemning the US or pushing for tough tariffs to be imposed there as well. I think it was Liam Fox who today or yesterday was suggesting that we all need to take a step back, keep calm heads, and not try and engage in a tit for tat trade war with an ally. But of course, Liam Fox and the UK very much have their own interests at heart here, because they are very much relying, and we are very much relying on a trade deal with the US after Brexit to show people that we can make a success of it.
Well, Craig, we'll continue to talk Trump's tariffs with Alfonso Esparza, who's in Toronto. Good morning indeed to Canada. How are you doing, Alfonso?
Good, good. Hi, Johnny and Craig.
Before we talk Trump's tariffs again, I want to get your reaction to the latest US jobs figures. Growth faster than expected in May, with the employers adding 223,000 positions. That was higher than expected, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think across the board, it was a very good report. So we have 3.8% unemployment. That's an 18-year low. Wage growth also at 0.3%, so beating expectations. So all in all, it's, again, the June rate hike was already expected by the market, but this puts the fourth rate hike of the year definitely on the table. So the market is taking it as a dollar positive story.
Indeed, and that positive jobs data has fueled expectations that the Fed will raise rates at its next meeting later this month. What sort of effect has that had on the dollar today?
Right now, the dollar is still digesting the whole trade war situation. That's been the biggest story of the week. So I think we went from Italian crisis to a trade war. So right now, the dollar is still, it got some legs back, but it's going to end up the week mostly flat. So I think across the board, we've seen a lot of volatility. We've seen, again, crises and stabilization all in 5 days.
I think with the dollar right now, there's so many factors at play. I think we have to remember that as well. As Alfonso alluded to, the tariffs comes on the back of the Italian situation. The dollar for a chunk this week has actually been the safe haven play. So we've seen US Treasuries, for example, yielding below 2.8%, I think, at one stage on the 10-year yield, because of its safe haven appeal when we were seeing big risk off trade. And then later this week, we have seen a little bit of that unwinding. I think, to be honest, when it comes to these jobs reports with regards to the dollar at times, I think there's just a lot of noise. We see a lot of volatility. I try not to read too heavily into it unless it's a really significant jobs report. And I don't personally see this as hugely significant, simply because we did see a decent jobs growth figure, but it's not anything that's out of line with what we've seen for quite a long time right now. Unemployment fell to 3.8%, which as a headline figure sounds fantastic, but when you see that participation fell slightly as well, then that does distort that number slightly, and you start to question whether the unemployment rate is actually dropping for employment reasons or for participation reasons. So the volatility that we see in the dollar around the actual announcement itself, I tend not to read too much into it from a longer term perspective. From what I'm concerned, and I agree with Alfonso, is that it means that it would suggest that a fourth rate hike this year is very much on the table. But again, I don't think it would have ever been off.
Would you agree with those sentiments from Craig, Alfonso?
Yes. So what we've seen right now is that the June rate hike, it's already fully priced in. So the market believes there's a very high possibility, and it's all based on what the Fed members have said every single time that they have come across sort of this question. The Fed is willing to let the economy run a little hot on inflation, but they're still like to see it sort of pushing that a little bit. So June is definitely a possibility, September, and then probably a December rate hike. And that's the fourth one that's been sort of touch and go. But right now, what the market is getting the message that this is a go.
For those people who work outside of your industry, guys, it must be very confusing with these different stories taking the headlines each particular day. We've got this jobs data today. We've had the fallout in Italy. We've got Trump's tariffs, Spain as well. And dare I say it, we haven't even mentioned the B word, Brexit, today, which makes a change. It is a very confusing set of affairs for people to understand. Would you agree?
Oh, totally. And I think the hardest part for us as an investor to understand is risk aversion. So what happens now when there's something that geopolitically moves the needle? And what has changed from the past 5-10 years is that safe havens are now switching a little bit. So the US dollar used to be a very solid safe haven of wherever happened, everybody just went there. And now, because some of the things are being triggered by the White House in Washington, so that it's less of a safe haven now than it was 2 years ago.
I completely agree. And I think that's a very important point. We have to remember why things are a safe haven. This week, the dollar very much has been a safe haven because it's been in relation to Italy and Spain. But when we are talking, I think it was earlier in the year when the Trump was getting very combative with North Korea, and the dollar wasn't seeing the same safe haven status. And so you see the same with these the trade situation as well. I think it's always very difficult. And don't get me wrong, in a way, you look at our position from market commentators, it's very easy to explain why something's happening in the aftermath. Trying to anticipate how something's going to respond is far, far more difficult. And even people who are watching the market on a daily basis, following every story as it happens, piecing everything together, we can also and often will be caught off guard by how the market responds. And it's only through looking back at the situation and trying to piece all the puzzle together, once again, that we start to make sense of it. But again, it's easy to have 20/20 hindsight.
If only we all did, we'd be very rich people. We've got North Korea on the horizon as well, which is looking ever more positive by the day. We've had these talks between Mike Pompeo and the Koreans. So it's looking highly likely that we are actually going to see this summit between the two leaders of the United States and North Korea. Markets will like that, won't they?
Oh, definitely. Whenever we see sort of the war de-escalation or the escalation of this type of events, it's positive for the market. Right now, we've seen an approach. I believe a letter from President Trump, it's making its way to the Korean camp. And it's, again, it's funny how the White House is stressing that there's no offer or threat included in the letter. So they're keeping it very cordial. Nobody wants to sort of mess with the summit in Singapore. So I think we'll be waiting for that to happen. And the problem is that we don't know exactly what will happen because it's two different personalities and the market will be watching. Anything that gets the summit back on, it's definitely going to be a positive for the market overall.
And they've played down expectations in the short term, haven't they, as to what is going to come out of this summit, should it go ahead, and said this is more of a long-term set of negotiations.
For sure. I think that's been sort of one of the keys in the later stages of the negotiations. Don't try to focus too much on the details, just like get everybody in the room. I think the biggest impact was just that, getting the two Koreas to meet, to talk, and just take it from there, as opposed to sort of a clear agreement or somebody, again, everybody gets to save face and the process moves forward.
And just to reemphasize Alfonso's earlier point, these are two very big personalities, but also two extremely unpredictable characters. And I think the events of the last couple of weeks is a very stark reminder of that, that these talks, which both of them had lauded, all of a sudden collapsed over something which, let's be honest, seemed quite unnecessary. It started with the military exercises that the US and South Korea said.
Well, also,
those
comments from John Bolton as well about the Libya model. That was a major factor because suddenly the North Koreans, and don't blame them, were getting cold feet.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we have to remember, again, with these two sides, they both have very similar personality traits, and it's their unpredictability around that which makes this this situation so difficult to anticipate. And you've now got Trump in particular, who surrounded himself with the people who are as unpredictable and as hot-headed and hawkish as he is. So as soon as things start to appear to go awry, and that started, for example, with Kim suggesting that he wasn't going to attend the summit, all of a sudden, both sides will start to dig in their heels and start to make comments which are not going to help the situation, which escalates the situation so much more than it needs to before they start to sit down and come back to the table again. So I don't think we can expect anything else.
I'm certainly expecting the summit to go ahead. And both these guys, they love being the centre of attention, don't they? They love the sort of Hollywood of it, really, the drama. And as I said earlier on, the expectations as to what's going to come out of these talks in the long term aren't really that important. The fact is that the summit will take place.
I think the most interesting thing from my perspective is who's going to have the worst fitting trousers, to be honest.
Or the worst haircut. Listen, guys, before I leave you, I'd like to have a look forward to next week. Craig, what are you particularly looking for out in Europe?
Well, I'll let Alfonso take North America, obviously. I think from Europe, politics is going to be dominant. The Italian-Spanish situation has not gone away. I think that's going to be rolling. Brexit, I think, in the coming weeks is going to come back to the forefront. They had their end of June deadlines that they wanted to hit. So I expect to be a lot more Brexit talk. I think from an economic standpoint, I think we're lacking a little bit on economic data, a few notable releases across the week. But I think politics is going to be a massive driver this side of the pond.
Alfonso?
Pretty much keeping the same line here. In terms of the calendar, it's going to be very few events that are really going to move the needle. In particular, I'm looking at Friday, June 8th, the Canadian employment numbers. But other than that, it's going to be all about trade. So we've seen, as Craig mentioned, yes, Trump has surrounded himself with hawks, either war hawks, trade war hawks. It's just they're going for the throat. And I think the latest shot in sort of the focusing on the allies. So we have Europe, Canada, Mexico in the sights of the tariffs. I think that's, and whatever developments come back from, we've heard a lot of really strong talk from all the leaders saying that they repudiate this action, that there's a retaliation already in place. Canada, Mexico have come back with pretty much dollar per dollar retaliation. So this will definitely be a major theme. And funny enough, it leads us into G7, where some of these topics will be discussed. And it's very interesting, sort of what the U.S. has planned in terms of its if it's a America First strategy and how that could actually backfire.
Alfonso, just one quick question on all of this with the trade perspective. Do you think the tariffs that's just been imposed now, does it help NAFTA talks or does it really hinder them? Because the way Trudeau's come out today and yesterday in retaliation to this, he almost seems angry rather than disappointed that Trump's had the audacity to impose these tariffs. Do you think this has the potential to actually hold them back rather than Trump's clear intention, which is to try and speed them up?
Well, I think the biggest sort of a bone of contention is the fact that this has been touted as a sort of the tariffs follow a sort of a security-minded policy. So this is that basically he's labeling some of the country's threats to security so that they need to be taxed into safety. I think that's the one thing that irked him the most, because it's, again, it's allies. He mentioned the history of Canada and the U.S., and even the NAFTA bloc has been very beneficial to all three nations in different scales. So there's winners and losers in all three of them. But I think it was that sort of that going after your allies that was irked Justin Trudeau the most. And definitely NAFTA has been sort of a very long process, very difficult process, and the negotiations have really not have gotten anything of substance. And that's one of the reasons, actually, that the U.S. said that this is where the tariffs were being put into effect, because the European trade negotiations and NAFTA was taking so long and no real progress. I mean, what they left off is that the main reason why there's very little progress is that the U.S. has not really come to the table to negotiate. They came to dictate the terms, and that's not how trade deals are done at this scale.
Alfonso, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us from Toronto.
Thank you.
That's Alfonso Esparza in Canada. And Craig, thank you very much for joining us today. Have a very, very good week indeed.
Thank you. You too.
And don't forget, you can listen to this podcast on iTunes and on Android. Until next time, have a great week.
was the OANDA podcast from the team behind Jazz FM's Business Breakfast, a daily early morning 30-minute briefing for the day ahead. On air from 6 a.m. Listen to Jazz FM on DAB, online, or just ask Alexa.